Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now! More than 10 people have died. More than 10,000 homes and offices have been damaged or destroyed in the devastating Los Angeles fires. We'll speak to climate scientist Peter Kalmus. He fled L.A. 2 years ago, fearing that his neighborhood would burn down. Then we remember the life and legacy of Jimmy Carter.
He gave voice to dissidents, stood up to dictators, brought countries together in peace. His heart broke for the people of Israel. It broke for the people of Palestine. And he spent his life trying to bring peace to that holy land. And he talked about it at the dinner table. It was the same in public as it was in private.
We'll air excerpts from the state funeral for Jimmy Carter at the National Cathedral, and speak to Ralph Nader and others about his legacy at home and abroad. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Southern California, firefighters are continuing to battle multiple wildfires raging around Los Angeles, which have now claimed at least 10 lives, though officials warn the death toll could continue to climb. This is L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna.
Based on the devastation that is clear, looks like a bomb, an atomic bomb dropped in these areas, I don't expect good news, and we're not looking forward to those numbers.
A new fire, the Kenneth Fire, exploded Thursday evening in the West Hills north of Calabasas, quickly spreading to 1,000 acres. Meanwhile, the two largest fires, the Palisades and Eaton fires, were just 6 and 0% contained as of early this morning. Experts say the wildfires not only are the most destructive in U.S. history, but likely will be the most costly disaster as well. Over 10,000 homes and other structures have been damaged or destroyed. At least 180,000 residents are under evacuation orders. This is Alita Johnson, lifelong Altadena resident who lost her home in the Eaton blaze.
But nothing prepares you for this amount of destruction. I mean, there's no manual. There's no book. That night when we left, it was so frightening. You could barely see I could barely see my hand in front of me because the visibility was so bad and the winds were whipping just ferociously.
Boil water advisories have been issued in much of the affected areas, with only bottled water recommended for drinking. Meanwhile, health experts warn children, the elderly, and those with certain medical conditions are particularly vulnerable to health complications from inhaling wildfire smoke, which is filled with fine particulate matter. Red flag fire weather warnings are continuing today. Forecasters warn gusty, dry winds could return to the region as early as Sunday. President Biden linked the historic L.A. wildfires to the climate crisis as he vowed federal aid to cover 100% of disaster assistance costs over the next 100 days. This comes as new data from Europe's Climate Monitor confirms 2024 was the hottest year in human history, with the average global temperature rising by 1.6 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. That's more than the 1.5 degree limit set by the United Nations 2015 Paris Climate Accord. Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with a climate scientist. In Gaza, Israeli forces bombed tents housing displaced Palestinians west of Khan Yunis overnight. It was one of several attacks that killed 70 people within 24 hours. That's according to Gaza's health ministry. This comes as a new study in the medical journal The Lancet finds the true death toll in Gaza may be 40% higher than official figures, which now stand at more than 46,000 Palestinians killed and nearly 110,000 wounded. Here in the United States, the House of Representatives voted to sanction the International Criminal Court after it issued arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former military chief Yoav Gallant for war crimes and crimes against humanity. 45 Democrats joined 198 Republicans to approve the, quote, illegitimate court counteraction act, unquote. In New York, 11 students have been suspended by New York University for 1 year for participating in nonviolent anti-war protests last month. In a statement, NYU faculty and staff for justice in Palestine called the suspensions a draconian case of collective punishment. Palestinian journalists in Gaza gathered for a news conference outside Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah, where they decried the hypocrisy and neglect of international media organizations. This is reporter Abu Bakr Abed.
We are just documenting a genocide against us. It's enough after almost a year and a half. We want you to stand foot by foot with us, because we are like any other journalists, reporters, and media workers all across the globe, no matter the origin, the color, or the race. Journalism is not a crime. We are not a target.
To see our interview with Abu Bakr Abed, go to democracynow.org. The Palestinian Journalist Syndicate reports nearly 200 journalists have been killed in Israeli attacks since October 7, 2023. Over 400 others have been wounded or arrested. In more media news, the New York Times has come under fire after it refused to run a paid ad by the American Friends Service Committee that referred to Israel's war on Gaza as a genocide. The ad read in part, quote, tell Congress to stop arming Israel's genocide in Gaza now, unquote. Joyce Aljuluni, General Secretary of AFSC, called the move, quote, an outrageous attempt to sidestep the truth, adding, quote, Palestinians and allies have been silenced and marginalized in the media for decades as these institutions choose silence over accountability. The AFSC is a Quaker organization. President Jimmy Carter's state funeral was held Thursday at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. All five living presidents were there. President Biden delivered a eulogy.
Throughout his life, he showed us what it means to be a practitioner of good works and a good and faithful servant of God and of the people. And today, many think he was from a bygone era. But in reality, he saw well into the future.
Following the ceremony, Carter's body was returned to his hometown of Plains, Georgia, where there was a private funeral, so he could be buried next to his wife of 77 years, Rosalynn Carter. After headlines, we'll continue our look at the presidency and legacy of Jimmy Carter. The Democratic Republic of Congo has banned Al Jazeera after it published an interview with the leader of the M23 rebel group, which recently seized territory in mineral-rich eastern Congo. M23, which has been accused of widespread, indiscriminate violence, took control of the town of Masisi last week, which is roughly 50 miles from the city of Goma. The UN said recent fighting in the eastern DRC had displaced over 100,000 people in about a week. Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who's long been accused of backing the M23, called on Congolese officials to start negotiating with the rebel group. Planned peace talks between DRC President Felix Tshisekedi and Paul Kagame were called off last month after Congo's presidency said the Rwandan delegation refused to take part. Meanwhile, Amnesty International is calling on President Tshisekedi to immediately halt plans to execute 170 Congolese prisoners convicted of armed robbery and to abolish the death penalty. A number of European leaders are calling on the European Union to stop Elon Musk from meddling in national elections after the billionaire CEO hosted the head of Germany's far-right AfD party on his social media platform X. During Thursday's 75-minute virtual live encounter, Musk heaped praise on Alice Weidel and her far-right anti-immigrant party as it campaigns for German elections February 23rd. On Thursday, Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez made a clear reference to Musk during a speech commemorating the 50th anniversary of the death of the Spanish fascist dictator Francisco Franco.
The international far right that we've been opposing in Spain for years, led in this case by the richest man on the planet, openly attacks our institutions, incites hatred, and openly supports the heirs of Nazism in Germany in the next elections to be held in the most important country in the European economy.
Meanwhile, in Austria, tens of thousands of people held protests in Vienna and other Austrian cities Thursday as the ultra-nationalist Freedom Party and its leader, Herbert Kickl, began talks to form a coalition government. President-elect Trump is being sentenced by a New York court today over his 34-count hush money and 2016 election subversion conviction, making him the first felon who will serve as U.S. president. This comes after the Supreme Court denied Trump's request to halt today's sentencing. Meanwhile, a federal appeals court ruled Thursday the Justice Department can release part of its report on Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Trump could still ask the Supreme Court to block the report's release. And a federal judge in Kentucky threw out the Biden administration's expanded Title IX rules, handing a win to Republican-led states as they carry out more attacks on transgender youth. The Education Department had sought to expand the longstanding federal policy protecting against sex-based discrimination in schools to include LGBTQ plus and transgender students, as well as pregnant people and survivors of sexual assault. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show looking at the devastating fires in Los Angeles, where at least 10 people have died. More than 10,000 homes and offices have been damaged or destroyed. Entire neighborhoods have burned down. The death toll is expected to rise. More than 35,000 acres have already burned. The fires continue to burn due to high winds and dry conditions. The largest blaze, the Palisades Fire, is just 6% contained. The Eaton Fire near Pasadena remains 0% contained. Analysts project the cost of the fires may reach a record $150 billion. The climate-fueled fires come as scientists at the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service have confirmed last year was by far the hottest year on record, with global temperatures exceeding 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times for the first time. We're joined now by Peter Kalmus, climate activist, climate scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab. He's speaking on his own behalf, not on behalf of NASA. He's just written an opinion essay for the New York Times headlined, "I'm a climate scientist. I fled Los Angeles 2 years ago." He joins us now from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Peter, thanks so much for joining us today. Explain why you fled Los Angeles 2 years ago.
Oh, Amy, I just have to take a moment to, I don't know what to say anymore. I'll get to that in a second, but I just want to make sure the reason I wrote the piece was because we have to acknowledge that this is caused by the fossil fuel industry, which has been lying for almost half a century, blocking action. They're on the record saying that they will continue to spread disinformation and continue to attempt to block action. They've known the whole time that the planet would get hotter like this and that impacts like this fire would happen. And then a point I really wanted to make in the piece, which they wouldn't let me make, is that this is still just the beginning. It's going to get way worse than this. 2 years ago, 2020, when that Bobcat fire happened, the whole time I was in living in Altadena, it was getting hotter and more fiery and drier and smokier. And it just didn't feel like I could stay there. When you have a trend line, things getting worse every year, right? Like, where's the point where it breaks? You know, like you keep going and keep pushing the system, getting hotter and hotter, getting drier and drier, right? Like, you know, emitting more and more carbon dioxide from burning fossil fuels. Eventually things break. I didn't expect my neighborhood to burn this soon.
Explain what's happened, Peter, in Altadena, in the town that you left.
It's complete devastation. I mean, you're your audience probably has seen some of the images. The neighborhood I lived is gone. I would say the majority of my friends have lost their homes there. Every now and then there's a home that's still standing amidst the ashes and the devastation. I don't even know what kind of rebuilding after this is going to look like and feel like. I don't know how this is going to affect the housing market, the insurance industry going forward. It's the thing, again, you know, I think everyone needs to understand, and I wish the New York Times would have let me make this point, that this is going to get worse. I can see that today just as clearly as I could see how a hotter and drier and more fiery Los Angeles was getting. I mean, I think in the future, if we don't change course very quickly, and maybe it's even too late to avoid some of these much more catastrophic impacts, but I'm fully expecting heat waves to start appearing, that where 100,000 people die, and then maybe 1 million people die, and then maybe more after that as things get hotter and hotter, because there's no upper limit, right? Like, we keep burning these fossil fuel industry keeps lying, the planet just keeps getting hotter, these impacts just keep getting worse. It's not a new normal. A lot of climate messaging centers around this idea that it's a new normal. It's a staircase to a hotter, more hellish earth. And you know, a lot of climate impact predictions have erred on the side of least drama. It's hard for even scientists to wrap our heads around how everything is changing right now on planet Earth. No matter where you look, the indicators, you know, when spring comes, how hot the winter is, habitats that are moving, ice that's melting. Everywhere you look in the Earth system, including, of course, ocean temperatures and land surface temperatures, you're just on this trend towards a hotter planet and all the impacts that are associated with it. And I don't know what it's going to take for us to stop all these stupid wars and come together and actually deal with the emergency that our planet is in the process of becoming less and less habitable and everything that means. Humanity, we've got a real crisis here and we're ignoring it. You know, another paragraph they took out of the piece, both the Democratic presidents, President Obama and President Biden, they were very proud to expand fossil fuels. President Obama said, you know, all that oil and gas expansion, that was me, people, right? Right after he was done being president at a lecture he gave at Rice University. And now, of course, we have a Republican president coming into office who says this is a hoax, who's gaslighting the people who are following him. Like, I don't know how long it's going to take for conservative working class people to believe what's right in front of their eyes, that the planet is getting hotter and that we have to come together and stop listening to these clowns who say it's a hoax. I mean, look at it's all around us. Why do I have to be on Democracy Now saying this? Right? It's very obvious what's happening.
Well, Peter, we thank you for being with us. We're so sorry about what's happening there in your community and all over Los Angeles. And of course, we're talking about a heating world, so around the world. And we hope to have you on next week. Peter Kalmus is a
client. My heart breaks for all the victims, too. It's just I can't wrap my head around what's happening.
Peter Kalmus is a climate scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab, speaking on his own behalf, not on behalf of NASA. We'll link to your piece in The New York Times. I'm a climate scientist. I fled Los Angeles 2 years ago. And just reading his last sentence of his op-ed, nothing will change until our anger gets powerful enough. But once you accept the truth of loss and the truth of who perpetrated and profited from that loss, the anger comes rushing in as fierce as the Santa Ana winds. Peter Kalmus, the NASA scientist, has been arrested numerous times for his climate change activism. Coming up next, consumer advocate, former presidential candidate Ralph Nader, on the life and legacy of the late President Jimmy Carter. And then we'll go internationally to his legacy in East Asia, as well as the Middle East. Stay with us. Peltier Song by I Rebellion. Many at the end of Biden's term are calling for Leonard Peltier, the Native American leader, to be pardoned. Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with another man that many are calling on to be pardoned. But right now, we go to the national funeral of President Carter. President Biden joined with the four other living presidents Thursday for the state funeral of President Jimmy Carter. He died December 29th at the age of 100. After the service, Carter's body was flown back to his hometown of Plains, Georgia, where he was buried at his family's peanut farm next to Rosalind Carter, his wife of 77 years. She died in 2023. Speakers at the funeral included their grandson, Jason Carter.
He gave voice to dissidents, stood up to dictators, brought countries together in peace. His heart broke for the people of Israel. It broke for the people of Palestine. And he spent his life trying to bring peace to that holy land. And he talked about it at the dinner table. It was the same in public as it was in private.
Civil rights activist Andrew Young, who served as UN ambassador under President Carter, also spoke at the funeral.
James Earl Carter was truly a child of God, not only a good farmer, but a nuclear physicist chosen by Admiral Rickover to assist him in developing a new nuclear navy. But at the same time he was working on a nuclear navy, he was thinking of peace on earth and goodwill toward all men, and especially women and children.
To look more at Jimmy Carter's legacy at home and abroad, we're joined by three guests. But we're beginning with Ralph Nader, the longtime consumer advocate, corporate critic, former presidential candidate a number of times over. His most recent op-ed for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is headlined, Jimmy Carter Was My Last President. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Ralph Nader. Why do you say that?
He was the last president to actively encourage participation and involvement in governmental processes by the progressive civic community in Washington and around the country. I mean, he insisted on hearing from consumer advocates, environmental advocates, civil rights advocates, and he proved it. He appointed the best possible regulators. For the Federal Trade Commission, Mike Perchuk, Joan Claybrook for the Auto Safety Agency, Donald Kennedy for the Food and Drug Administration, Doug Costell for the Environmental Protection Agency, and Carol Foreman, all kinds of leaders that would never be inside government. They would be excluded. Their calls wouldn't be returned. They couldn't meet with the president of the United States. And so he really reflected his motto, why not the best? And he proved it. You know, we had a president who was rejected by the American people in favor of a grade B actor from Hollywood, Ronald Reagan, who dismantled just about everything that Jimmy Carter did. And put corporations in charge. So we have the lesson of Jimmy Carter now being conveyed to the American people at long last. And there was Donald Trump in the audience at the National Cathedral. What must be going through his mind? Must be going through his mind is this guy Carter was a lot different than I was. Donald Trump.
One thing for sure that President-elect Trump has commented on is that the flags will be at half staff during the inauguration, perhaps the first time ever, and he is very unhappy about that. But if you can elaborate more, Ralph Nader, on why you believe Jimmy Carter lost his second-term bid for president. Of course, he lost to Ronald Reagan. And why you believe President Trump won for the second time.
Well, he lost in great part because he was sabotaged by his own Democratic Party. He was challenged by Ted Kennedy, of course, which is okay to have a competitive primary in 1980. But the Democratic Party sabotaged him in Congress. People may not remember that there was a majority Democrat control of Congress. They should have enhanced what he was doing, and they obstructed him all the way to defeating the Consumer Protection Agency, which was the prime goal of the consumer movement, which deals with health, safety, and economic well-being, after all. And this agency was going to intervene and challenge other federal agencies who were in a cushy relationship with their corporate patrons, playing loose with their mission in the public interest and giving corporations what they wanted. And this agency had the power to take them to court. Well, it was defeated by the Democrats in Congress. And so that weakened his performance. I think Jimmy Carter's performance, Amy, illustrates the problem of the electorate. Period, that their expectations for what a president should do is very, very low. If you ask average people, what would you want from a president? They wouldn't tell you all that much. They'd say, well, he should be honest and keep us strong. But look what Jimmy Carter did that was ignored by the expectations of the people, which led to the Reagan landslide. Of Carter and the loss of many fine senators and representatives in the Congress. He deregulated cartels over the airline trucking railroad industry. His personal behavior was exemplary. He was honest as presidents can come. He was stable. He read, he thought, he acted. He had an efficient use of his time. He paid attention to facts and realities, saw problems and wanted to treat them. He was okay with democracy. He was the first president to deal with renewable energy and warned about the climate issue, which people ignored. This is back in the 1970s. He observed the laws, which succeeding presidents have had a hard time doing. He pressed for arms control treaties. He wanted peace negotiations. He wasn't just shipping weapons to Netanyahu genocidal action or anywhere in the world. He wanted peace negotiations. And, of course, he kept saying things that brought the best out of people. Trump brings the worst out of people, which is a very, very bad trait.
Let me ask you more about the legacy of Carter's economic policies. In 1984, his former chief domestic policy advisor, Stuart Eisenstadt, who eulogized him yesterday at the state funeral, wrote a piece for the Washington Post headlined In Defense of Jimmy Carter. Eisenstadt wrote, quote, "He began taking the Democrats into the new post-New Deal era. He did this by continuing to embrace the party's traditional social ideals while supporting fiscal moderation, less government intrusion in the economy, a philosophy of government that some now describe as neoliberal. He was strongly committed to fiscal moderation and government efficiency, pressed for tax reductions the nation could afford. It was Jimmy Carter, not Ronald Reagan, who began reducing the regulatory burdens on such industries as airlines, trucking, railroads, communication, and banks." Your last minute, Ralph Nader.
Well, I'm just saying that we should observe the lessons of Jimmy Carter here. We're being led by an unstable, ignorant, corrupt madman. Let's face it, he thinks climate change is a hoax, notwithstanding the fires, the tornadoes, the hurricanes, the rising sea level, the droughts, the floods. We're in a very perilous situation. The only institution that can counter it is the Congress. That's why we have this Capital Citizen newspaper to empower people to pay attention to Congress, summon to town meetings, senators and representatives back in your neighborhood, and show that under the Constitution, the Congress can turn the country around. There's nothing else left, Amy. The lawyers are AWOL in our country.